Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by RockAuto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
Welcome, everyone, to MotorWeek podcast number 58. I am John Davis, and around our table in Studio C, I'm joined by our head writer, Brian Robinson.
Hello, John.
Our over-the-edge reporter, Stephen Chepnick.
Hello.
Our associate producer and all-around road test guru, Ben Davis.
Thanks.
And we've got a lot of cars to cover, but we're going to start on the domestic side of the pond. We're going to be going around the world on this one. Chrysler 300, the second generation of the Bentley-esque 300. We've had the car in here recently. You've been seeing it on commercials. So, okay, everybody, what do you think?
It's big.
It's big. It's full-size car.
Yeah, I mean, it looks big from the inside, outside.
But did it drive big?
At first, yes. But once you get in and you start driving, it's not as full-size as I found.
Brian?
Yeah, between that, if you're looking for a full-size American-built car, that and Taurus is pretty much it. And Taurus is front-wheel drive or all-wheel drive, and the Chrysler is rear-wheel drive or all-wheel drive as well. But I think they did a great job with it. I mean, the previous 300 was a big hit when it came out. And this one just takes the luxury up a notch, especially in the interior. And it still drives great. You still get Hemi power. Looks good.
And even on the exterior, the elegance is bumped up a notch tastefully. It's obviously still a 300, but you know, the little edges are rounded out a little more style dripped all over it. Looks pretty nice.
Big, the base engine, which is now the Pentastar V6, that's a big improvement. Yeah. We had the 300C with the 5.7 Hemi in it. Very nice car. Sucked a little gas. I guess we got about 21.5, which isn't bad for a full-size car.
And it's all-wheel drive, too.
And that's right. That is the extra weight of all-wheel drive. I like the interior. I thought I have a couple of bones to pick with, even though the materials are far nicer than anything before, had a sort of a matte black finish in the middle instead of a glossy black, and I thought that was a little down. But certainly a huge step up in elegance from the other car. What everybody – our car had the big 8.4-inch navigation screen, this huge screen in the middle of the dash. What did you think of that?
I thought it was awesome.
Why?
I thought, one, you could see everything, and everything could be controlled through the screen. You had to take your eyes off the road a little bit to really – kind of get everything, but you can do the climate, radio, Bluetooth, phone, full phone. The cool thing about it was, a lot of these upgrade packages have, but the speed limit on the screen when you're in navigation, and if you went above the speed limit, the numbers turned red.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, it's a full Garmin system, right, which I can't believe manufacturers haven't taken advantage of that earlier, just because the Garmins are so nice.
The gauges were gorgeous.
Yeah, like a subtle blue background
lighting. The light up, the
silver.
The light up blue, yeah.
It feels old school in a way. They don't really feel retro, but just the feel of it. It just kind of feels retro, but it's still based on the Mercedes chassis, the original 300, so it's got a really solid but yet comfortable ride.
Boy, does
it.
Really solid. Yeah, you know, but it's old school in the way that an S-Class Mercedes might be a little old school feeling, right, or even a Bentley, for that matter. It's like it's old school, but it's richly done.
It's borderline pretentious, but still available for the common man.
Nice car. Speaking of pretentious, another good segue, Nissan Murano Cross Cabriolet. Let me set the stage here. A Murano crossover vehicle that's a convertible, not a four-door convertible, but that's a convertible. One of the oddest-looking convertibles we've ever seen. Think of it as an elegant Jeep-like vehicle, sort of, you know, not really made for that much off-roading. But what did you guys think of it?
Yeah, it is the world's first all-wheel drive crossover convertible, and I'm not sure who was wanting one. But Nissan decided to make it, and it is definitely unique.
It was odd being in it because you sit so high off the ground, yet you're exposed. Now, I mentioned Jeep because the closest thing I can think that it feels like is when you're in, an old Jeep Wrangler without the tops and maybe even without the doors. Speaking of which, Ben.
Haven't had my doors
Ben
on
has
in
one.
Months. I compare it to a speedboat. It's got like a weekend boat kind of feel.
Especially in our white, though. Yeah, the white, white.
Yacht white.
And even through where the sea pillar would be, it kind of looks like the back deck of a vintage wooden boat, maybe a little bit.
Very good. That's a good analogy. Yeah.
I thought when it first came in, I used kind of something that we normally don't use. It's the ugliest car I've ever seen. But once you get in it, you drive it.
You're harsh.
I think I kind of like this car.
I think a lot of candidates for that title.
First impression is it's not the nicest looking car.
Yeah.
It's just not a white. I don't think lends itself. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's really nice.
Certainly something that if you were living either. Well, in a posh community, it would stand out.
A yacht club type community.
Yeah, the one trick feature on the cloth top, it has like the back glass, but then almost like a glass panel sunroof over the rear seat passengers. So even if you're in the back, which was surprisingly roomy, it still felt like a crossover in the rear seat.
It's quite quiet, too.
Yeah, even with the top up, you still had some views. But obviously, trunk space has almost disappeared. Because of the top storage. So it's a sport utility without much sport or utility.
It's the kind of vehicle that manufacturers do when they have a ton of money to spend and been very successful. So I sometimes wonder if this wasn't conceived before the recession and they went ahead with it. Yeah. It's a good signature vehicle. It'll draw a lot of people into the Infiniti showroom. I mean, into Nissan showrooms. And I kept saying that. It seems to me like it ought to have been an Infiniti, but... it's a Nissan, and I think a very curious but not altogether unpleasant vehicle.
Not at all.
That's about being – it was actually nice, very nice to try.
Be unique.
Something that's – I'm not sure more controversial, but maybe we've got a lot of opinions on. The new BMW X3, this is the second generation X3. They're a hugely popular compact crossover. Any impressions? This vehicle's been on the market for a few months now, but we finally got one in for a couple of weeks.
I had it on the track yesterday, and I was extremely impressed. For its size, it doesn't feel like it should handle the way it does. It handles almost like a 3 Series. It's really sporty. And it took my mind a while to get used to the fact that my mind was telling me, hey, I shouldn't really be going this fast or be handling this sharp in a car with this much center of gravity.
Right.
But once I convinced myself, it was amazing.
It is based on the 3 Series, I'm sure. Yeah.
Once upon a time, every BMW we got in here, and it was typical of German cars, had a lot of body roll. And no cup holders. They had a lot of body roll. And it didn't seem to affect their handling at all. They basically rolled, but they handled well. I thought this was a throwback. It was like, because you're so high and your center of gravity is so high, just driving down the road or taking normal corners, there is a lot of what they used to call sway or body roll in it. More than I remember the old X3. But on the other hand, it sticks like glue. So
As much as I love BMW cars, I've never been a fan of the X5, X6, X3, any of the SUVs. They just, to me, they ride rough. There's not a whole lot of room in there, but they're incredibly fun to drive. And I'm not sure I'd want to put up with them on a daily basis, though. And they certainly addressed that with this car. It's a little smoother. The rear seat's still cramped.
The front seats are pretty cramped and kind of hard, too.
It's not really for the person that wants an SUV and then is like, oh, hey, here's a BMW SUV. It's more for a person, I want a BMW and I want a little more room.
It's a prestige vehicle. It's an interesting combination of sports sedan, firmness, and utility. Not everybody's cup of tea.
It's got all the same bells and whistles as all the other BMWs, 5 and 7 series, but including the annoying shifter, which I can never – it always frustrates me.
The flick shifter or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What I noticed, I drove it today and in reverse. It has the regular rear camera, but something that I've rarely seen only in the Infiniti is an aerial view as well.
That's right.
Which I thought is –
Did you find it useful?
Definitely useful. And I
why now well, you're looking straight down at the
you're
bumper.
Looking straight now again the QX 5.6 which
yeah Nissan is, has had yeah. some the 360 camera right
that yeah. Yeah.
around view
that yeah. I think it's a much larger vehicle than this is and I think having something like that it was very useful for something that this is I think just for show. You know, it's small enough. You don't need it. All you need is your rear.
Yeah, but if somebody, if you've got an animal that's right behind your rear bumper, it probably will show you where maybe the traditional rear view wouldn't.
Of course. I mean, yeah. But I think of all
or use, a person.
Right. I still think it's cool.
Yeah,
I think
it was cool. I agree with you.
It's really neat that it has.
Yeah, a lot of these cameras are coming out now with multiple views. Even our Honda Odyssey minivan we've got has got like three views, and they give you a little bit more information.
More information is good.
Okay, let's move on now to our lightning round, where our MotorWeek panelists have the opportunity to share their opinions on a topic making the headlines recently. Groupon's tried something new. Their Deal of the Day website recently offered $500 off on a new car, and the cost of the Groupon was $200, $199. There was a Michigan car dealer that tried it. So the idea was you spent $200 and you saved $500, so the net savings was $300. It did not work. They didn't sell enough of them, and people didn't seem to be ready for it. So my question is, do you think this kind of discount might work in the future? Was it too early? What do you see as the pitfalls for this kind of innovative approach, if it is an innovative approach? What do you think?
I don't think it was enough. It really, to come down to it, $500. I just recently bought a car, and we just said, this is what we want to spend. It was X amount of money, and they just said, okay or no.
In other words, they came down more than that right off the bat.
You can get $500 off just by walking in the door.
Right.
Every dealer,
right.
That's the first thing, yeah.
Right.
Was this a situation where, say, your deal's on the table and then you whip it out like a coupon and they're...
I suppose you could, except I think the dealer knows who buys it.
I see.
But I'm not sure of that.
So it's predetermined that you have one in the dealings, and that's kind
of... I'm not sure of that. I don't know the answer to that. And that would make a huge difference, because otherwise you make your best deal and throw
and
it on the table at the end, and it's a little extra
game
on top.
Changer. Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know if they knew. But if I had to guess, I would bet the dealer knew. Yeah.
And that would make me not want to buy one, because I would feel defeated that I couldn't haggle that just on my own.
Because
jobs.
That would be the advantage of it.
I think that's a good idea to try. For no other reason, he's got people like us talking about him.
Yeah.
But, I mean, bottom line, he's got a number in his head of what he's going to sell a vehicle for. And so however you get to that number, whether it's a coupon or just haggling with the guy, I mean – it's still going to not sell it for any less than a certain number.
True. I mean, I guess for somebody that really just does not want to haggle at all, or if it's a vehicle that's so popular it's going for near list price, it has some value, but obviously it didn't work in this case.
Yeah, and then they might not even honor it for vehicles that are
going
for close to list.
And there goes our bell. Thank you, Michelle. So let's move on now to our MotorWeek mailbag. This question comes from Greg in Massachusetts. Just curious, with Chevrolet celebrating its 100th anniversary, which Chevrolet is your all-time favorite? Let's go around the room. Brian Robinson.
Wow, that's a tough one. Well, my first car was a Vet, so I'm partial to Vets. Unfortunately, it was a Chevette, not a Corvette.
But, you did have a Corvette, though, too.
69 Stingray, yeah, for a week, I think. So,
what'd you do, wrap it around a telephone pole?
It's a long story. We have to do another podcast on that one.
But, it was about a 500 horsepower car, though.
I don't know. I love Suburbans, any year, any engine.
Oh, my goodness.
I love to just hit the road, pack them full of stuff, and eat up gas, and just cruise across the country.
Woo! Ben.
I like late 60s, early 70s pickups. Had a 72 Cheyenne 20 with a 350 in it. It was a great car.
Two utility guys. How about you, Steven?
I'm going to have to go with a Corvette. Just
but which anyone? Got to narrow it down.
Well, I think the 80s style Corvette. Oh, just cool. With the, I think just that look.
Face, man.
Face. Face package.
Definitely. I mean, I think just that the look of it, it was, you know.
That
just,
car is classic really when you look at it
you
now.
You can get
it
those things
good.
Cheap now,
yeah,
too.
That's the car to get right now, guys.
Yeah, I had a 78, and they're going for nothing, you know. All right, my favorite actually is also a Corvette, but it's a 62 Corvette. And the reason is my brother owned one, and he was older than I am by 8 years. And I just drool. I mean, I was years away from getting my driver's license, but I just lusted after that car. And, of course, the girls and all the trimmings that went along with it. It was two-tone, white and red, and it was a gorgeous car. And I suppose it's one of the ones worth about $1 million today if you knew where it was. Very good, everybody. So it's Chevrolet's 100th anniversary. Congratulations, Chevrolet, and congratulations to all of us. We have completed yet another Motor Week podcast, number 58, if you're keeping count. I want to thank everybody sitting around the table. Brian Robinson, Ben Davis, Stephen Chupnik, also in the back room, our audio engineer, Jim Bigwood, our podcast creator, Bob Mixter, and of course, our lovely producer, Michelle Parker, the lady with the bell. Thank you all very much for tuning in for Motor Week's podcast. Be sure to catch Motor Week on all your local public television stations. And if we're not on your public television station, call them up and ask them why. And you can also catch us on HD Theater every week. I'm John Davis. For all of us at Motor Week, we hope to see you soon.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. Motor Week is made possible by RockAuto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at MotorWeek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.